Sansa, where he was shot and she was assassinated. What are you calling for now?
We are calling for his safe passage out of Honduras back to Mexico. We are also calling for an independent investigation of the assassination of Berta Cáceres, because so far it's been grossly manipulated by the Honduran government, which is seeking to target and blame other members of Berta's group who themselves have been detained and are now being investigated and interrogated without lawyers being present. And we are also calling for the decriminalization of the indigenous and popular group Copin that Berta led. I want to say that this is not just a horrible human rights crisis happening in Honduras right now. It is also a battle for the future of Central America, which is the epicenter of extractive industries. So on the one hand, you have multinational corporations that are in Honduras to take over forests, mines, waters, indigenous lands, and intellectual property rights, which others call indigenous knowledge. And on the other hand, you have social movements, which in Central America have been led by Gustavo Castro and by Berta Cáceres for the protection of these indigenous lands, for rights, and for participatory democracy.
Because this is International Women's Day, I want to end with the words of Berta Cáceres when she won the 2015 Goldman Environmental Prize.
Our Mother Earth, militarized, fenced in, poisoned, a place where basic rights are systematically violated, demands that we take action.
Again, that was the assassinated Honduran indigenous environmentalist, Berta Cáceres. And I also will continue to cover what is happening to Gustavo Castro Soto. Though the Mexican ambassador tried to get him out of Honduras, he survived the assassination attempt on him, but he's been shot twice. The Honduran authorities are continuing to keep him. Bev Bell, thanks so much for joining us from New Mexico. And that does it for our broadcast. To see our full report on Berta Cáceres, you can go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Has 3 job openings. Go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us. This is Democracy Now!
Hi, this is Peter Tork, and you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. Thank you.
All right, here we are. We're at the place where we have to start the van. Let's get inside and we can just sort this out. It's necessary that we do this now because we're not going to move the van now, but we're going to have to move the van in a day or so. And if you start it a day earlier, it'll start easier a day later. That's just how engines work. I don't know if you know anything about engines, but that's kind of the deal.
Yeah, yeah. I totally understand what you're saying about the oil pressure and having the fluids being kind of in a good sort of state of flowing and fuel pressure and all these things. Of course,
I don't know anything about what you're talking about. I just know that if I turn the key, the engine will go, and then the engine will go again a day later if I turn the key again.
Okay, and we're going to document all this. And I'm really sorry. I apologize to the people who are hearing impaired and would have liked to see a video of this. I will be doing this more with the camera in the future. Documenting our antics, trying to, you know, get as much coverage as possible. But obviously that's tricky stuff. I mean, that's a whole involved production. I cannot be doing that all the time.
Kyle, where's the van? Did you take the van? No, I'm sorry. I'm kidding. No, you see, don't kick the van. I'm kicking the van. That van is very old. That van's older than you are. Ooh, you can't kick things like that.
It was a tap.
Well, all right. But I was fooling with the audience because on radio you can do that. You can say, where's the van? And they think the van is missing because they can't see it. I'm not making fun of blind people. I'm just saying that, you know, you can basically embellish upon the truth a bit when one of the senses isn't there.
Yes. So we do have the capability of more senses, but this time you're going to get just the auditory senses here, because that's the way we're configured today. And so here it is, the starting of the van. Because what are we waiting for? What is the anticipation here?
Well, the anticipation? Well, we are expecting a delivery of mate to come through the door.
A heck of a lot of mate?
Enough. But you need to be able to get past the van with a pallet jack, and there's not room. We're going to have to back the van out so that we can get the pallet jack in.
Back the van out, he says.
I don't want to push the van out. We'll have to do that if we can't start it. But here's the other thing, Kyle, and this is important. We're going to start, and this is important for the people at home, too. We're going to start the van without opening up the garage door. The reason being, it might take a while to start the van. It's really cold outside. If we open the door, we're going to get cold, in addition to not being able to start the van. We're going to keep trying until we're able to start the van, and then we'll open the garage door. Now, you should never do this. You should never start a vehicle without opening the garage door, because you have this thing called carbon monoxide, and it will poison you very quickly, unless you know what you're doing. And hopefully we know what we're doing, but in this particular case, we're just choosing convenience over coldness.
Okay, they get that. They're safe. They don't care anyway. They presume we're going to take precautions.
I just don't want people to think, oh, because Kyle and Emmanuel started the van inside a garage without opening the door, it's okay for me to do it. No, it's not. We're not saying that. It's not even okay for us to do it. In fact, this would be a great document if we don't survive to show what we did wrong. And I'm sure this will be very popular with the kids to listen to our last moments. But we intend to open the garage door, assuming we start the van. We might not start the van. Maybe it won't start at all, and then we'll be totally safe.
I think so.
Okay, just so we know, I think what we should do is open the window so we can hear the engine turning over while we're sitting inside.
Are you telling me how to produce?
Yes, I am.
I think I am well capable of producing.
All right, you produce then.
Yeah. Why don't you show me what you're going to do instead of talking about it?
We're both going to open the door, close the door, open the window surreptitiously, but close the door loudly, and then I'll try starting the van while we continue our conversation. How's that?
Of course.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, so let's. Why don't you get in the passenger side? I'll get in the driver's
side. Yeah, I'm capable of getting in. Right. I presume you're going to be in the door. Why are you going to be in the back?
Well, I'm just explaining it for the listeners who can't see us.
They can see us. They can see us with their imaginations, E. Need a little grease on that door. Yeah, that's just like butter.
There we go. You know, you're sitting on a tape dispenser. I don't know if you know that on your seat there. You want me to move that out of your way? Hang on. There you go. Yeah, it can't be very comfortable. I'm sorry, I put a lot of stuff there before. Usually I don't have passengers when we're starting the van. All right. Okay, the light works. That's a good sign. It means the battery's not totally dead yet, but it will be soon. This van, by the way, has four different keys, and they all look the same. One key for the side door, one key for the back door, one key for the passenger door and driver door, and then one key for the ignition. I don't know who designed this. Do you think it's possible to make one key that does it all?
No.
Well, that's just dumb, I think.
No.
I've put now three keys into the ignition, and they're all wrong, so I know this last key will be the right one there. Okay, so there's a method to this.
Weren't we talking about something, though, while we were doing this?
Yeah, but let me just at least try and start the van once. It's not going to start. I know it's not going to start. It's cold. It's probably going to sound really miserable, but it will start eventually. It just takes a little bit of time. So I would appreciate if you don't tell me, I'll hit, you know, pump the gas or do this or, you know, start it a little bit longer, you know, try it a little longer. I've been doing this for a long time, and I eventually it'll work.
So not only do you have to be completely neurotic and out of your mind when you do this normally, but since we're recording this, you have to tell me that on tape so everyone else knows how crazy you are about this procedure.
I promise you I'll cut that part out.
I bet.
All right. So now let's see what happens. Do you want to record my reaction when it doesn't start, or do you want to record the engine from outside the window as it doesn't start?
I'm
giving you the choice.
I think, well, I'm really open to either scenario. If you think it's best that maybe I record how little faith you have in the motor, then I'll go outside and record the motor. But if you would like to comment as your faith is acknowledged that it's not going to start, then I can record that too. I don't know.
You know, we're worrying over nothing. There's going to be plenty of time. There's going to be plenty of time to record from all different angles because it's not going to start for a while. So I think the first time it doesn't start, you can record it right next to where the engine is. And then for all the times after that, you can be right back in here watching my mood continue to deteriorate.
Okay, I'll get out now.
Are you ready?
Yeah. I don't think it started. It didn't start that time.
No, it didn't start that time. What a surprise. Okay, well, you know, this is the case. This is what happens, even in the summertime.
So are you going to try again then?
Yeah, I'm going to try again. What, you think I'm just going to give up now? Yeah, I'm going to try again. But I'm not going to try again right away. I'm going to give it a little bit of time to think about it, and then I'll try it again.
Okay, this is the part where I'm not supposed to say anything. I don't coach. I don't tell him what I think. I don't pump the gas. Don't do this. Don't distract. Just shut up. And
oh, I'm sorry. I hit the horn by accident.
An accident, he says. An accident. After this break, ladies and gentlemen, we'll get to the bottom of this so-called accident.
Did you hear that? It actually turned over. That's much faster than I thought. Kyle, you can open the garage door now.
Ladies and gentlemen, the garage door is now allowed to be open. We have a sign. We have a sign that we may, in fact, hear the mighty, mighty telco van start up and roar its mighty roar.
I want you to be inside when we actually get started. Because I'm surprised. Only two attempts, and it made that little, what do you call that, a turnover? It wasn't really turning over, but it's saying that it intends to start.
The characteristic Dodge click that makes you encouraged it's going to finally start? Yeah, I heard that.
Well, the last time I tried this, it took a good 20 minutes to get to that point, and this time it was only two attempts. Maybe it's because we started it a couple of weeks ago that it actually remembers that, yeah, hey, I'm supposed to start. It bodes well.
I'm not a know-it-all. I'm not going to be the know-it-all here. But I will say that I think perhaps the months you waited before having started it then may have impacted that overall ability to start. What do you think?
It sounds almost like you're saying that I did a good job. And okay, I'll agree with that.
I'm not capable of saying that.
Well, a lot of people aren't, but they learn. All right, so what I'm going to... This is a 1981 Dodge Ram old telephone company van. 1981, think about that. That's before the divestiture of the Bell system. This was a Bell van, a real Bell van. And it's got over 100,000 miles on it, but and it's a manual transmission. But this thing has such a good engine. It really does. It's got such power. We've driven it to the Dayton Hamvention in Ohio a few times and all around the New York area. It's a great van. It really is.
Yes, it's a workhorse.
All right. Now we're going to... I think it'll actually start this time. All right. Are you ready?
Yes.
Please don't distract me because it's important how you hit the gas and turn the key and all that. Okay, that could have gone better, but it did make that noise again like it was about to start. You don't want to flood the carburetor. You don't want to do that. You got to plan it just right. It sounds sort of like the battery is like struggling, but the battery isn't dead, right? The battery's in good shape.
No, we did a test last time with a meter, and we were able to see it had well over 12 volts. So it's a happy battery, even when you've left it for a bit.
Why does it not sound happy then?
It's laboring to turn over a massive engine that is not catching and helping with spark ignition.
But shouldn't it at least try a few more times instead of sound like it's giving up the first time I try it?
I don't know. The way a guy, old telco guy, explained it is that it's some kind of fuel pumping mechanism that has gears and stuff on the block itself and otherwise can't get fuel fast or what. I don't know. I don't know how it works. It's an old motor. It takes a while for the movement and the cranking to get the right fluids in the right places.
I'm not sure how an old telco guy would know anything about engines. You'd need an old mechanic guy to be able to tell you that. But whatever, he does seem to be right as far as the idiosyncrasies of this particular engine.
He seemed to know it took three times.
Yeah, except it takes more than three times when it's been sitting a while. But yeah, it never takes less than three times unless you started it within 24 hours, then it starts right up.
Correct.
My plan is to start it once a day until we get this delivery. That way, it's guaranteed to always start.
That sounds like a neat plan. So you would be comfortable if I was filming you right now, because I easily could be behind a camera.
I didn't know the difference. I have my eyes closed.
That's good. That's good. That was a test.
All right. Well, here's the thing. What I'm going to do now, and for you following at home, I'm going to turn the ignition and then hit the gas. What I've been doing is hitting the gas and then turning the ignition. I'm gonna switch it around now. And I think that's what will work in this particular case because we've seen a response that seems to be somewhat receptive to starting. So if I start the turning over process and then hit the gas, I think it'll start up. It might be a little rough, but it will start. Everybody ready? Here we go. All right, that was close. That was pretty close. I'm going to wait about 20 seconds and then do that again. But it's definitely going to start.
Riveting. If you're just tuning in, we are about to start the 2600 Telephone Company van. This is a historic van. This van has been in operation for quite some time in service to the magazine and to, well, by virtue of that, us here at Off the Wall. And basically, we've been recounting our travels and catching all of you up on where we've been, where we've gotten to, where we've explored, where we've been filling in while we were gone with what kinds of stories that we now have to finish in another story to finish before we get back to telling the rest of the stories. And anyway, a part of that story is this process here, where we finish talking about our trip to Hungary and share with you just a little bit of what it takes to fit in these recaps, which means you have to kind of come with us while we have to start a van to recap the other parts of our journeys.
It strikes me, I just realized this, that we've had this van 10 years longer than the phone company had this van. The van is 1981, we bought it in 1993, so they had it for only 12 years. And if you add 12 to 93, you get 2005, and it's 2015 now, so that's 10 years more that we've had it.
Isn't that something? And I think it's served us a bit better. It's really a beautiful relic here, and it is functional and mighty as ever.
All right, now I must ask for concentration, or allow me to concentrate so I can start the van. We're going to do the same thing again. Here we go. Okay. Oh, boy, it seems to have gotten worse, actually. I think I waited too long.
Do you think this could be stage fright?
From the van or from me?
The van.
Well, it is sort of on the spot. This time, though, I'm going to try and be a little bit more aggressive. I'm pretty sure if I just get the combination of hitting the gas and turning the key right, you know, while the battery is struggling, once I get it to that point, then everything will be fine. So let's just keep our fingers crossed. Okay, I've had a bit of a setback here. I'm going to have to leave it for a minute or two.
And as we wait, we are going to just remind our listeners that we are trying to start a van, and we're taking a brief pause from that to recount. We're taking a pause from our recapping of our travels to start this van.
Let me just correct you on one thing. We're not trying to start a van. We are starting a van. All right, there is no doubt that it's going to start. It's a procedure. We are going through the procedure of starting the van. We're not trying to. It's going to happen. It's just the procedure is a little bit different every time.
To all of our listeners just tuning in, we are in the middle of starting a van that is going to start imminently. And that is all something we're fitting in. We're fitting in the recap of our travels to time when we are doing basically logistical stuff, which involves starting this van. And any moment now, we'll be joined by the mighty roaring sound of a 1981 Dodge Telephone Company van.
Along with the carbon monoxide fumes that go with that, it's a joyous moment whenever that does happen. I'm just glad we're doing it now rather than when there's a pallet waiting outside to get in with an impatient guy attached to it. We're basically thinking ahead, and we're going to do this. We're going to do it now. Here we go. Ready? Here we go. Okay, you know, it's getting closer each time, sort of, but it's getting a little frustrating here. It's going to start. It's going to start. Why can't I have a vehicle that starts easily? Oh.
It's not your fault. I empathize, and you're doing a fantastic job. And we're all waiting here. We're supportive. The world is cheering for you. And I don't want to distract or take away from the challenge you're currently facing with the van. So I'm going to go back and watch.
Well, maybe we should talk more about our trip, because I think I need to be distracted a little bit. It's sort of wearing on me that it's not starting after all these attempts. And I do intend to start it. It sounds like it's going to start. You see, it's more frustrating when it sounds like it's about to start and doesn't start than when it doesn't sound like it's about to start and you have to keep trying. I don't know why that is, but it's true.
So depressing coffee in Leipzig is a good part of any journey, and it's part of starting your day, and you want to start it as normal a way as most people do. And of course, yeah, the large commercial coffee place, that's a good base if you need something familiar to stop off on your when you're transiting from place to place. But it's really good to go out and find the local flair and get things you ordinarily wouldn't be able to find, and also just get interested in something while you're abroad that you wouldn't maybe have the time or the the insight about in your regular day-to-day life. And that was part of the joy of doing some of those things as far as being creative with where we get coffee and stuff.
Yeah, coffee and also food. We went to quite a number of really cool places that we just, you looked up and we journeyed to. We figured out how to get there. We'd always get a day pass for whatever city we were in so we could hop on any tram or any metro or, God forbid, any bus. Buses are always harder to navigate. And just go to these places and hopefully get in. And, yeah, that was a little trick we had as we'd go. Well, also, our schedule kind of made that happen. We'd wind up going later in the afternoon, sort of like around 4 or 5, and kind of before all the people came in for dinner and right after lunch had left. So we usually were able to get into the places that we selected.
As long as it wasn't too early, like too much before 5, because usually places that are open during the day will close a bit for the afternoon. That's not uncommon at all, and they'll retool before they begin their dinner service.
Yes, that's true. So do you want to describe any of the places that we went to in Budapest?
Well, I think one was kind of a small bistro, or a kitchen that was near a government building. It was really nice. The cooking and everything went on basically right next to us while we were sitting there. That was very cool. But a really approachable, very small place. We, again, just sort of slid in before there were any sort of reservations or people piling up. He gave us a time frame, and we said, yeah, we're going to be out of here in an hour. So we did really just...
That wasn't the place near the government building. The place near the government building was the night before. Remember, we were walking around, all these police people on the street, and apparently the prime minister was at parliament or whatever.
Oh, you're right. That was like the more family-style place that had the... what kind of instrument was it?
You know, what was that instrument? It was like a percussion instrument, but it sounded like a piano. And it's a Hungarian instrument.
Cicalone.
Are you just making up a word, or is that...
No, I made it up.
Okay, well, something like that. And the guy is just sitting there banging away on these things, but it sounds like a piano. And that was really cool. And you were really good because you talked to the guy. You actually, later on, he was smoking outside, and I just thought he was a guy smoking outside, but you complimented him on his playing, and that really, that's an important thing to do, because the guy is out there sweating, you know, in front of everybody playing music and not being appreciated as much as maybe he should be. So it's good to acknowledge that.
Yes, yeah. Both of those places had really passionate owners. The guys running the places really loved what they were doing. One guy wanted it to be a bit of a family place. The other guy was just intensely, you could tell, it was a bit of a family operation, but very passionate about the food and having guests there enjoy themselves. So both places were really neat.
Excuse me one moment.
Yeah.
Okay, that was good. I'm going to... do it a little sooner this time. I'm a little worried by the way it's that gap between starts. That just sounds like it might give up.
If any of our listeners out there have experience with General Motors vehicles, particularly 1981 Dodge vans, please let us know what you think this starting condition is about. And if you have any insight, share it with us. Maybe there's some service we could get that would... maybe breathe a bit more life into this vehicle's ability to start.
Is Dodge General Motors?
Yeah.
I thought it was different.
No.
Okay, well, you would know. Here we go again.
I think it's the same, yeah.
Oh, so close, so close. It's so close to dying and so close to starting. I think the key here, though, is to keep trying and not let too much time pass by, because... it seems like it's really about to catch. All right, I'm going to try again. Oh, wow. Okay, again, I'm going to keep trying. Give it about 15 seconds between tries. It's such a fine art, you know? You really have to get it just right. Here we go. Okay, it's getting closer. It's getting closer. I'm going to get it. I'll wait 30 seconds this time because maybe I did it too soon.
You know what? I think maybe I'm maybe jinxing you. Should I just go outside and maybe let you try it? I think maybe that's it. My presence, all this audience, the audience here, we're quite a numerous group of people. I think this is a lot of pressure for you.
I didn't want to say anything, but it is a lot of pressure, Kyle. And
I'll
do a lot better if I was by myself.
Okay, we'll leave an open door policy here, but maybe I'll come back. But I'll just mic the front here. You know, let's see. Maybe if I walk away, I'm not paying attention. There's no pressure, no audience.
Let's make it so I don't see you. How's that?
Oh, gladly.
That was the best one yet.
Best one yet, he says. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just joining us, we're starting a van here on Off the Wall. 2600 Telco van is being started as a part of our regular duties, and we're recapping many adventures and travel. I can smell gasoline, and hopefully we won't be gassed by carbon monoxide. We're on our final attempts here at starting the van. I heard some firing, heard some smoke. Maybe that's helping. Hey, E, you're doing a great job in there.
Next time, definitely.
All right, as you all heard, he says definitely. We'll get back to the recapping of travels in a short moment here as we start the 2600 van. It's, very nearly running and ready to go. That sounded really good, E. I think that one's that you're getting there.
Thank you. That encouragement is just what I need to get going.
I sense some sarcasm, but well, this could be it, folks. We're listening here. Stay tuned. Pressure's on. We're on our 10th attempt, I think. I'm not keeping track. This is Kyle for Off the Wall, and we're starting a telephone company van. We'll get back to the travel recap shortly, but until then, more progress on starting a old telephone company van. Hey, that sounds great. Good job. What? Hey, look, you started it right up.
Oh, yo, of little faith. Yes, I got it started. I knew I'd get it started. Despite all the negativity, despite all the naysaying, despite all the hate, I got it started. And I just want to thank America, and thank God, and thank everybody else who was rooting for me. I knew it was going to work. And, that's all I can say. The sky is the limit now.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That is E, recounting his great valiant efforts here with the telephone company van and what it takes to start it here in 2015.
I want you all to take a deep breath of that carbon monoxide fumes that are going on right now. That, to me, says America.
Yes, so, E, do you...
Why don't we stand outside for a little while?
Yeah, wow, that's... We're going to let it warm up now, right? Okay. Okay. Jeez. Oh, God.
I'm not kidding. That really is.
That's a lot
you
of.
You can see it right there. It's like I have to walk through that. That's
a fair amount of gas.
Well, it takes a fair amount of gas to start the van. But, you know, it's what you have to go through, especially when it's cold. Having it run now for about 10, 15 minutes will ensure that when we come back tomorrow and start it, it'll start right up.
Yes. Yeah, and this is what it takes. We have a lot of projects. We've got a lot of things that we're doing here. There's a lot of people counting on us. And, this is the lifeblood. This is what our country is about. We work hard, you know, we're busy people. And, you know, sometimes you just have to move a vehicle or start a cargo van.
Seems like we have to do that an awful lot, and I wish it was easier. I don't know why it's so hard to start this damn van, but it always has been. It's not like it's getting harder. It's just always been a hassle.
Well, routines change, and, well, we'll continue to monitor this situation. But that was pretty good. It was a good effort, and I feel good that we're able to move it, and we'll probably be able to start it with relative ease. Like I said, if anybody has any information about starting vehicles like this, and don't tell us to buy a can of starting fluid.
Oh, my God.
Ether is not the solution.
Yeah.
We don't want to get our vehicles all strung out on ether.
Seriously, no.
They get hooked.
No, addicts is vehicles. No, it doesn't work. Not for us.
Au naturel.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. Hey, so as long as we're standing out here in the frigid cold while the van is, like, getting warm, let's continue talking about, well, Budapest. What else happened in Budapest? We climbed the mountain. Well, we sort of climbed the mountain to see the big Statue of Liberty, whatever that is, on top of the mountain in Buda. Looks down over the whole city. It's really nice, really picturesque. And I think it's something that we've noticed in so many of those cities, that you're in a city, but then off in the distance is something really majestic, like a massive statue or a mountain or a castle. A lot of cities have castles. And to me, growing up in a city that has a castle would change who I am. You know, I grew up in Queens. We didn't have a castle. We didn't have any castles.
Maybe a white castle.
Well, I didn't know about those when I was a kid. That might have made a difference. But it's just, it's so majestic, such a link to history, and it means a lot. It really does. To this day, it just affects me to see something like that. And I don't know, the mood of the people just seems different. I'm not saying it's because of a castle that the mood is different. Obviously, it's because all sorts of different cultures and backgrounds are in play. But I just feel affected walking around places like this when there's history and beauty all around. It just makes me want to go to more places like that.
True, true. That's definitely something I can empathize with and a reaction I certainly get. I feel that way about having grown up around mountains, a lot of mountain ranges and tall stands of trees. Like the majestic kind of beauty that you can just look out your window or see in a part of the world like the Pacific Northwest or wherever you might be. I felt, you know, same thing at Salzburg, castles and mountains and just all sorts of terrain that's just fascinating. And there's something really beautiful about it, and it just it does kind of impact you a little bit. It affects you. It's great.
So now, okay, Budapest, moving on, we went to Vienna from there, right? That was our next stop?
Yeah, yes, we were in Vienna.
Do you remember anything about the train ride from Budapest to Vienna?
Well, I remember it, on the way there, it seemed to turn around a little bit. And
well, that's unfortunate, Kyle, the recording cut off right there. That was us just over a year ago. After having started the van, and we started to reminisce about the trip that we had come back from a few weeks earlier, and now it's over a year later, and we have to somehow figure out what happened on that train between Budapest and Vienna. Do you remember anything?
Well, yeah, as I was saying, the train loops around, and then it comes back into the sort of central station in Wien. It's actually W-E-I-N, that's Vienna, but it's spelled Wine everywhere. Anyway, so
I hate to do this,
and it,
Kyle,
continued on with the Alpine.
Yeah, but I'm sorry, you can't continue on because I just was told that we have a lacrosse game scheduled that's going to be coming up at a quarter to the hour. I'm sorry, I thought we had the full hour, but I guess we don't. Can you wrap it up in maybe 10 seconds?
Well, yeah, and it was sort of on the Alpine like theme with a lot of the scenery and so on, but Vienna is definitely more of a historic city.
I have to say, you're so patient with all these constrictions that we have, but I'm sorry, we're out of time. We'll try to pick this up if we still can remember the trip, or maybe we should just go over there again and reenact it and figure it out from there. I'm sorry to the listeners,
it's
too.
It's so accessible because you can just walk right into
I
a
apologize
huge museum
to
or
people listening
a
in the future.
And this amazing history.
It really was a good story. It really is a good story, and one day we'll tell it.
And then we found some schnitzel.
How about Comfortably Numb with different lyrics to make up for this?
Okay.
Come in, sit down. Try to tell me use your own words. I must seem very old, but I was young once too. I've seen a lot of boys like you. I always say second thing to them. There is no pain, you are. Ship smoke on the horizon. You're only coming through in waves. Your lips move, but I can't hear what you say. When I was a child, I had a fever. I can't explain, you would not understand. This is not how I am. I have become comfortably numb.
Stony Brook men's basketball team, and you're listening to the longtime home of Seawolf Sports, WUSB.
This is Matt Sank, head baseball coach of Stony Brook, and you're listening to Division I Seawolf Sports on WUSB 90.1 FM.
Good afternoon and welcome here to Stony Brook Women's Lacrosse right here on WSB FM Stony Brook. It is the season premiere, and Matt Mankiewicz and Jael Henry have the call as the Seawolves take on Yale. Guys?
Give me a minute or two. I'm just going to set my laptop up. I'm going to take the stream. It's going to be slightly delayed, but...
We are back here as they get set for women's lacrosse action here on WSB FM. We are going to get you set for the rest of the women's lacrosse slate here on this Tuesday night of action. We start Holy Cross will take on
Davidson in North Carolina. Vermont will play UC Davis. Longwood will take on Cal. Robert Morris and LaSalle. Notre Dame and Virginia Tech. LIU, Brooklyn, St. Mary's. Canisius will take on Duquesne. Marquette will play Northwestern. Boston U will take on American. Radford will take on Stetson. And the last game of the night will pit Penn and St. Joseph's. As far as local teams in action here today in the NBA, the Knicks will take on the Nuggets. That is not till a 9 o'clock start right up in the Mile High City of Denver. The NHL, the Rangers are in Buffalo. They will take on the Sabres, a face-off coming up in about 15 minutes. The Islanders will host the Penguins. That game is on NBC Sports Network. Four NCAA tournament bids will be given out in men's basketball. We will keep you guys up to date with all of that. But for now, we're going to send you out to Matt Mankiewicz and JL Henry, we hope, here with the pregame show, guys.
And thank you very much, Cameron Boone, Matt Mankiewicz, and JL Henry here at Laval Stadium, where we are about to watch the Stony Brook Seawolves women's lacrosse team take on the Yale Bulldogs. And the Seawolves trying to bounce back from a tough loss to the University of Florida, the highest-ranked team that they would have beaten had they been able to, but they made things very close. So, JL, setting the scene, they take on the University of Florida, who they beat down in Gainesville last year, and Florida out for revenge. Not so easy for them, because the Seawolves had opportunities to tie or go ahead all the way down to the wire.
Yeah, it was a tough loss for the Seawolves, but this game today against Yale, they need this win. They're going to have a tough three-game road trip ahead at the number 11 ranked Northwestern team, then a number 12 ranked USC team. So they're going to need this win. Stony Brook's all-time ranks against Yale have been the best against any Ivy League opponent. They have five wins, actually, against Yale. So hopefully the Seawolves are looking that today is the same.
Absolutely. And even though Yale has played them tough over the years, the Seawolves, of course, rank number 10 or number 8, depending on which poll you follow. But they need the win, first of all, to be ready for the gauntlet that they're going to face, as you said, on the road. On the other hand, the Bulldogs, this is their first ranked team they're going to face this year. They have a 2-3 record. They beat Quinnipiac and Marist. They fell 10-6 at Cornell in their Ivy League opener, so already 0-1 in conference. But this last time they played was 2 years ago. That was back on April 9, 2014. Joe Spallina is 42nd as head coach of the Seawolves, which had tied the program record up to that point. Of course, he has since exceeded it to the tune of 25-5 since. But a tight one. It was a tight one against the Yale team up in New Haven. So, of course, you know, I guess they have the every other year deal, and the Bulldogs come down here. But against Florida, they were down by as much as 3 goals at one point, but Dorian Van Dyke had 2 goals for the Seawolves. Brooke Gubitosi had 4 caused turnovers and 3 ground balls. Gubitosi, the redshirt sophomore, ends up with the America East Defensive Player of the Week on Monday. She tallied a career-high 4 caused turnovers and matched her career best with 3 ground balls. And as you said, the Seawolves have to get back to winning ways as soon as possible because of that road trip they have coming up. Kylie Ohlmilt, in her first 22 games as a Seawolf, has posted 3 5-goal performances, all 3 on the road. She tallied 5 goals at Florida and Vermont last year, 5 at Bryant in their opener on February 28th, which of course was a big win for them. Courtney Murphy has 136 career goals, good for 4th in program history, but she only needs 22 to set the all-time mark. Demi Ann Cook holds the record for that one. So, go ahead.
Courtney is definitely going to break that market sometime in the season, but the Seawolves are coming off a game against Florida. Yes, it was a tough loss, but this team saw over 2,900 people in the stands, and that's 1,600 more than they've ever seen before. This Seawolves team, even on some preseason polls, they're ranked as high as fourth. So going to this game, they need to play their game, and it's going to be a tough game ahead for Yale.
So the lineup intros are just about to begin here. And we will defer to the public address announcer in just a moment. Of course, some basic announcements. Not quite the same crowd here on a Tuesday night. Of course, everybody wanted to see the Gators. But the other thing about the Gators is the Gators were loaded with a lot of local talent, 10 local players. So there was some blue and orange in the stands. But that is par for the course when a big opponent comes to LaValle Stadium, even on the men's side, sometimes even on the football side.
The Florida Gators were loaded with talent, but we are as well. Stony Brook had 5 preseason All-Americans, including, of course, Van Dyke and Courtney Murphy. But this team today, they need this win. Going again on a free game road trip, they need this win to settle in and to keep on track for the rest of the season.
Now, one thing that they do as a normal ritual before a game is that the officials will check the sticks of each and every player. And that is what the teams are doing right now, forming up lines. The Seawolves in their home white jerseys and Yale in their away dark blue. And everybody pretty much knows what Yale colors are, navy blue and white. And the Seawolves with the white jerseys, red numbers, blue skirt, of course, the lacrosse tradition. Yale players wear shorts and also with white shoes and socks. So as they go through the equipment check, that JL, you made a good point because you played men's lacrosse, obviously, as a goalie. And the one thing that you always marveled, you told me earlier, about the women's game is that the women's lacrosse stick looks like a lacrosse stick. You'd have to have a trained eye to tell a women's stick from a men's stick. But the men definitely know the difference.
Yeah, and that difference is the pockets. If you look at the women, first of all, when I first started playing lacrosse, actually cradling the ball and while getting hit was always a tough thing. But with the women's sticks, yes, they're not as physical as the men games. Yes, they don't actually get hit, but they have incredible stick skills, as you can see by their really small pockets.
So once the referees get done with that, we will get you ready for Stony Brook Seawolves women's lacrosse here at LaValle Stadium. It's the first broadcast this academic year we've had from LaValle Stadium. We'll be covering both the women's and the men's programs here. As the women have risen in prominence, they become too good to ignore, so we are not going to ignore them. We are going to pay closest attention possible. And most importantly, we're going to have some pretty good games on tap for you here on 90.1 FM WUSB Stony Brook. The men, of course, will face off on Friday, March 11th, against Rutgers. That's going to be at 5:45, and then we rejoin them on the Ides of March next Tuesday. They will face Hofstra for the first time in a long time, and then we'll travel up to Albany again to see what they can do against the Great Danes without the Thompsons. Then we break tradition a little bit. Instead of the road game against UMBC, which we traditionally do, we're going to stay here at LaValle Stadium because we're going to bring you women's lacrosse against Stanford. Stanford, of course, is one of several ranked teams the women face this year, including the many that we're going to be facing on the road as soon as they're done here against Yale. And that is going to be a pretty good game here, 2:45 p.m. start here on 90.1 FM. We will also have in-conference games against New Hampshire, a non-conference game against Hofstra on April 22nd, and then we will also follow them for the America East Championship. That first week in May is going to be pretty busy because, of course, the men and the women alternate nights in terms of the semifinals, the top four teams qualify, and the final. So we're going to be doing both. So we're going to be the men's semis one night, the women's semi the other night, and then men's and women's final should they advance. So we're going to be bouncing around all over New England as we get ready here.
Yeah, a quick note about the men. As a Stony Brook Seawolf student and fan, you're trained to hate Albany. But what the Thompson trio did in Albany was amazing to watch.
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt. And, you know, I've been, ESPN, of course, has been putting out all these trick goals. And, of course, plays of the week, totally get it, no problem there. I see some of these goals that have been rating plays of the week, and I'm saying, I saw the Thompsons do that how many times? Behind the back, over the shoulder, you name it. Let's hand it off to the PA.
A senior midfielder from Arlington, Virginia, number 3, Lauren Wackerly. A sophomore midfielder from Summit, New Jersey, number 4, Madeline Gramigna. A sophomore attackman from New Vernon, New Jersey, number 10, Kiwi Camizio. A junior attackman from Bethesda, Maryland, number 11, Tess McAvoy. A senior midfielder from Rye, New York, number 12, Tori Virtue. A sophomore defender from Winmore, Pennsylvania, number 15, Cooper Hall. A junior attackman from Dover, Massachusetts, number 16, Hope Handley. A senior attackman from St. James, New York, number 17, Nicole DeAngelis. A senior defender from Baltimore, Maryland, number 19, Kate Walker. A junior defender from Manhasset, New York, number 22, Emily Markham. A junior defender from Concord, Massachusetts, number 25, Victoria Moore. And the goalie, a sophomore from Chappaqua, New York, number 00, Sydney Marks. Head coach of the Bulldogs in her first season is Erica LeBrow, assisted by Alyssa Murray and Sloan Serby. Starting lineup for your Stony Brook Seawolves. A senior attackman from Hop Hog, New York, number 2, Taylor Ranfall. A freshman midfielder from West Sayville, New York, number 3, Mackenzie Burns. A junior defender from Hop Hog, New York, number 5, Jessica Volpe. A sophomore midfielder from Lynbrook, New York, number 11, Samantha DeSalvo. A redshirt senior defender from Farmingdale, New York, number 12, Megan Merritt. A senior defender from Shoreham, New York, number 16, Alyssa Fleming. A sophomore attackman from West Islip, New York, number 17, Kylie O'Miller. A junior attackman from Shirley, New York, number 18, Courtney Murphy. A junior midfielder from Northport, New York, number 22, Dorian Van Dyke. A redshirt sophomore defender from East Northport, New York, number 25, Brooke Uvatosi. A junior attackman from Rocky Point, New York, number 29, Alyssa Guido. And in goal, a freshman from Huntington, New York, number 31, Anna Tesserero. The head coach of the Seawolves in his fifth season is Joe Spallina. He is assisted by Caitlin DeFelice and Frankie Caridi.
Frankie Caridi, the All-America goalie here a couple of years ago. She's now taking on a job as an assistant. Just announced before the season started.
As we honor America and those who protect our freedom both at home and abroad with the playing of our national anthem. ¶¶
crowd's fired up. Teams are fired up. Of course, one other thing they do. Once the sticks are checked, they are left on the side of the field, and the lineups are introduced without the sticks. Women's lacrosse designed to be a non-contact sport, so the players do not wear helmets. They do wear eye protection in many cases. And one last word for the coaches. Joel Smilo, class of 1954, head coach of women's lacrosse, is now Erica LeGros. I guess the position is named after a great coach there. Alyssa Murray and Sloan Serpio, the assistants for Yale, and Kate Walker, the captain. Teams break their huddle. At least the Seawolves do. And that cheer you hear is the Bulldogs doing the same. Now, if you are listening on your radio here, if you're sitting in the stands, remember the blue lines on the Laval Stadium field are the women's lacrosse lines. And the goals are further apart. It is a larger overall field than the men's game. And this is one of my favorite parts of the women's game. The draw control. In the men's game, the two face-off specialists go shoulder to shoulder. The draw control players for the Seawolves. It will be number 22, Dorian Van Dyke. And the ball will be pocketed between the two sticks. In the crosses of each stick, they'd be overlapping and holding the ball above ground. Referee is set up just right, make sure it's fair. And here we go. Ball in the air going towards the Seawolves' side, and the Seawolves go on the attack immediately. That is Ole Miller with a quick stick, a beautiful cross pass over to Van Dyke for the opening score for the Seawolves 10 seconds in, and the Seawolves take a 1-0 lead.
This was exactly the start that the Sternberg Seawolves need. Get at them fast, score early, and let them chase you towards the end of the game.
Seawolves have the speed and the ability, and of course, as you were saying, stick handling is at a premium in the women's lacrosse game, but also passing, and that was a beautiful break for the Seawolves. Perfectly executed. So Van Dyke back for the draw control once again as we reset. Players working the wings have to be outside the center circle. Have to let the ball basically come to them. And the ball will again go into Seawolves territory. But this one's a loose one. Going to be 4-4. Finally picked up off the ground. And we have a call foul. Isolation foul. So Van Dyke will get a free clear. Immediately passes to her left side and going down low and then going to the right side and pass overthrown a little bit, but that was picked up. I believe DeSalvo got that one. She brings it back up to Burns, now on the right side. As the Seawolves try to work that right wing, now coming over to the left, there's Van Dyke, about 5 yards out from the circle, the outer circle. Van Dyke switching hands. Van Dyke, again, bringing it back up to the top. And going now to the right. Let's see who's going to take the shot there. That goes off the post and comes back Yale's way. Small numbers on the Seawolves uniforms, so we'll get it for you. as the Seawolves go full field on the put the pressure on, trying to force a turnover now. You have number 29 on the Seawolves side, Alyssa Guido, and she's putting pressure on the right side. So Yale goes to the middle. See if they can get the clear going through there. Nice long pass over midfield line. Yale is in Stony Brook territory. Making a move on the attack as Yale sets up, and they go down low for the score. And I believe taking that shot, that might have been Kiwi Camizio. So Yale ties it immediately. 28-13 left in the first half. We're tied at one.
Yeah, the Seawolves need to close up on defense. On that goal, Camizio just ran into the box, untouched, caught the ball, and finished.
Catching the opponent flat-footed.
Yale goal scored by number 11, Tess McAvoy.
It was McAvoy. It was 11, not 10, but McAvoy. She is a junior from Bethesda, Maryland. Georgetown Visitation is her high school.
Yeah, McAvoy is delayed Yale's leading scorer of 9 goals this season. She's tied with Hope Hanley for the team lead in points of 12 as well.
So back for the draw control. On the Yale side, I believe it's Nicole Danagelis, who's 17 on that. And this one's going to go back towards Stony Brook territory again on the left, to our left. But Yale comes up with it, and they will take it back into their own territory. Ground ball picked up by Camizio. Yale trying to get the clear. That's Hall. Now they're going to move the ball into Stony Brook territory. Once again, McAvoy. McAvoy hanging out on the left wing, just outside the Stony Brook zone as the Bulldogs work the perimeter. Picked up now by Madeline Graminia. Now on the right corner, that is number 3, that's Wackerly. Back up to the top again and out to the left. McAvoy, always dangerous, plays catch a little bit on the left wing. Looking for an opening herself. No, they'll wind around the perimeter once again. But this time they try to go down low to Wackerly. Wackerly had trouble handling it, and it is picked up by the Seawolves. So the Seawolves are going to be coming back the other way. Ground ball goes to Jessica Volpe. Volpe, by the way, is Italian for wolf, and she was ever vigilant on that ball. And now Gubitosi, fellow East Northport resident, completes the clear, and the Seawolves are in Yale territory coming back the other way. Van Dyke at the top, working out on the left to DeSalvo, all the way on the far side and around the X, or the men's X, the behind the net, to Burns. They come around the left wing again, back up to the top to Van Dyke, now to the left again. This time it's going to be Courtney Murphy. Murphy hanging on, back up to the top and out to the right. Working around behind the net, looking for, yeah, there's a one-timer, perfectly executed from behind the net, right into the hands of Courtney Murphy, and she completes for the second Seawolves goal.
The Seawolves needed that one, the patient offense on that goal. They scored early, and then ever since then it was Yale ball. They were dominating the pace of the game, but the Seawolves need that goal to gain back possession, gain back control.
Seen that happen so many times with a fellow that you're very familiar with, Yale, Brody Eastwood. And we'll be seeing more of him on Friday. Held down to one goal in their last matchup, though. So, against Fairfield. So, back for draw control again. Van Dyke working for the Seawolves. As the referee has to get everything perfectly positioned. And now the ball goes straight up into the air. Van Dyke wanted it herself, could not find the handle. And some contact away from the ball, so it goes Yale's way. Now Yale will try to complete the clear at midfield.
Seawolves goal.
And they will do it, going down the left wing. And Murphy. That's Katie Smith who gets the ball into Stony Brook territory. They'll work behind the net and back up to all the way back up to the top. Graminia, long cross field pass to McAvoy. McAvoy moving in. McAvoy drawing a double team. They're going to work behind the net again. coming around to the right wing, back up to the top now. Graminia one more time. And this time she overthrows it, and McAvoy can't handle it. It's way over her head. That's going to be out of bounds, and Seawolves ball. Seawolves will take it about three-quarters field. And it will be Gubatosi who will bring it in for Stony Brook. Murphy turning the Jets on the clear, but a clearing pass is a little bit too far behind. Mackenzie Burns, but a nice recovery, and she carries the ball into Yale territory as they work the ball along the right wing. Burns will take it back. Quick flip to Van Dyke over on her left. And again, working the left wing, Shan Coleman giving it back to Van Dyke. Playing catch a little bit now, DeSalvo and Van Dyke now. Van Dyke making a move. Van Dyke driving. Van Dyke gets the ball knocked free. But that's going to be a foul, so she should get a free shot on that one.